Step into the sustainable future with Payson, our next pitcher. As eco-consciousness takes the world by storm, Payson's here to leave a mark with an intriguing proposition.
Hi, Nettles.
Hi.
My name's Payson Muller, and you can hear by my accent, I'm not from around here. I come from Los Angeles, which is an industrial city, I've come to realize, but it is a special industry, it's the entertainment industry. But I was much more suited probably to a place like York where it's steeped in history, because that's my main thread of the monotropic interest and hyperfocuses of my life is around history. So I'm coming here today in my capacity as a shoemaker and also as an environmentalist, thinking about solutions to some of the problems that we have, you know, about, overconsumption, I guess. And so my thought of how we could maybe solve some of those problems was to think about in shoemaking how we could maybe make things better. So with my interest in history, my knowledge of traditional shoemaking techniques, I thought, well, why don't we look past the modern idea of what a shoe is and look at ways to build a shoe inspired by the past, because that's my interest and knowledge base, and maybe do without the plastics, you know? And so, you know, we've been working on that. I do that anyway because I do bespoke shoemaking, and that's all traditionally made with traditional hand techniques and traditional materials, which are, of course, natural, kind of more sustainable and biodegradable, or at least not bio-impacting materials.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, not everyone can afford that. And also, it, maybe on a huge scale, because we all wear shoes, right?
Right.
So in terms of the market, it's the world,
everybody,
right? It's in terms of scalability. A friend of mine is an advisor, and she's from the States. She's got a lot of business experience, and she thought, well, why don't we try the vegan idea then, to make shoes that out of leather that is not real leather, but a substitute, but made from 100% natural materials and ingredients that can be composted. So that's our mission. That's the remit. Now, there is a material which I heard about a couple years ago. It's a great one. Americans have come out with a way to using kind of composite technology and, you know, some modern innovations, but all the elements of this are natural materials that are not harmful to the environment. They could be put ground up and put in your compost. So we thought, okay, that's great. But here's the problem. They don't have the kind of structural leather we need to make the shoes we make in the traditional way.
Is that from a strength point of view?
Yeah, from the ability to construct a shoe in the traditional way, which the soling and the inner soling material is made from leather, is just an amazing material. I mean, leather is part of the human story for sure. And so I think that, they can both be part of the story for the future, moving away from plastics, which become microplastics. So that's the plan. We're working on a material that we have. We have a recipe, and we are refining a recipe to make out of existing materials and technology, also inspired by the past. But it's just an approach that I guess no one's thought of it. So that's the thing we're on. That will feed into our ability to produce a shoe that can be 100% biodegradable, grind it up, stick in your compost.
Have you got a prototype yet?
We do. Yeah, we do. But I don't have it here today to show you because...
Is that the reason why you should bring it?
Well, because it's, you know, this is something we were working on just now, you know?
Right. Yeah. Is the shoe complete?
No. The patterns, the last is made, you know, but we haven't, because we're not 100% with the recipe, that it will be exactly as we...
Oh.
And there's some details, you know, so there's bits to...
So what you're saying is you'll create the prototype or finish it off.
Yeah.
And then there may be things that you need to change. And where do you think those changes are likely to be?
Well, one is sourcing. So we do need to... We have sourced for the leather, leather substitute material that an American company has come up with. It's great. So we've got a supply arrangement with them. And the other part of it, which I hadn't mentioned yet, is the target audience. So I will answer your question in a second, but I just want to throw that out there first, because we're working on strategic partnerships with local schools, because we thought we'll start with school shoes because that's something that is a problem. Yeah. Kids grow out of them. You can pass them down, but then it becomes, you know, what's the age gap? How many storage space do you have for shoes? And, you know, so partnership with schools, school shoes, quite a narrow place to start, but clearly the whole thing is scalable. But we're hinging it on this 100% biodegradability. So in answer to your question, we have a few things with the supply chain, for example, you know, a good supplier of the threads we need. Historically, all the thread was linen, cotton, hemp, whereas now, you know, that's become a more specialist thing. But we hope to also be part of reviving those industries. There's some partners we're talking to in Ireland who are linen flax growers, and they are also working on the same thing, but, you know, generally trying to get the linen back to availability. There's some partnerships with Leeds University. They've gotten some innovation grants to pursue that. So that's kind of what we want to tie into, but with this school shoe focus to start.
As Payson showcases the design and mechanics of the product, it's evident that it isn't just a business idea. It's a vision for a greener future. The Nettles are keen to know more, and so are we. Let's keep the momentum going.
So am I right in thinking you have found a supplier who has come up with a leather substitute material that's going to be suitable for in terms of hard wearingness and and moldability?
And the bit about shoemaking that is what I want to do, I want to get back to the kind of shoes that they made in the past that can be repaired and rebuilt, which is something that is
critical. Left of that kind of disposable
throwaway.
Yeah.
And part of the throwaway culture is that you have molded soling units for each style of shoe, each size, and that becomes an engineering, you know, it just exponentially grows. If you have 10 styles of shoes and you have 3 width fittings, and, you know, you're talking like all these molds and, you know, stock of things and stuff. So we're thinking, let's get back to the raw materials. We know we can do it with leather.
Yeah.
But, you know, probably not everyone could wear leather all the time like they did in the past because there's too many of us. So let's come up with the other issue is grown here, you know, the materials, the sourcing of the materials from at least from Northern Europe, if not from, you know, the UK.
Does the nature of, you know, making shoes in old style command that inevitably they're going to be more expensive than just a pair of shoes you can buy on the high street? Or,
well, I don't think necessarily be more expensive, but I think there's argument to say it would cut out a certain sector of the middlemen that are, you know, getting cheap labor, getting stuff cheaply produced in the Far East mostly, and then shit over here. It would kind of cut that out because that's the shoes aren't any much cheaper, but you can get them in Aldi or something, but you know, it's that middle, that profit.
They'd be comparable with, you know, what people would potentially pay.
They're not going to be the $8 shoes and all.
No.
But the other issue is that there's growing understanding of the need for more healthy shoes. And that's something that when you get it outsourced, the actual foot shapes that those lasts are based on might not suit our kids. You know, as you see the bunions that all the older people have now, those are a result of not bad foot wearing.
But to know what you mean.
You lucked out then. You lucked out on the sizing lottery.
I was going to say, I don't think you mentioned it, or if you did, I think do you have a company name?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we're a registered company. It's called Earth Treads Limited.
Is that TREAD or just...
No, TREAD. There is a growing market for something that... is at the heart of this brand in the sense that it's part of my reason behind becoming a shoemaker, but it's minimal shoes, barefoot shoes that give a healthy foot shape, not necessarily heel, or if there's a heel, maybe a bit, but shoes that make sense for the human foot. Rubber will biodegrade if it's true rubber, if it's not vulcanized rubber, like, Vibram rubber soles, you know.
Know that they did?
Yeah. They're more like plastic soles nowadays, really.
Yeah.
Although, you know, some of them maybe, I don't know, I don't want to badmouth iRoom because they make amazing stuff, but.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
But I guess what I'm saying is pure rubber, sure, biodegrade, definitely. And I imagine that's often a use that people are doing. But then again, they're probably doing those molded sewing units, and that makes it unrepairable.
When we buy a pair of shoes off the shelf, we don't know what any of the components are made of, really, do we? We just buy them.
There are standards, you know, British standards around it, but even those are confusing. I recently did a course at SOTRA, which is the Shoes and Allied Trades Research Association. Kind of funny British-style quango. It's been around for 100-something years, late Victorian, early Edwardian. They made the boots for Shackleton and stuff like that, you know. Okay, so we did the course on the way that, you know, for legal reasons, what you can call full grain, top grain, leather, all that stuff. Even for someone like me who's done leather all my life, I learned some shocking things. Like almost all leather it can't be more than 0.12 millimeter of PVC over the whole thing. There's a thin plastic coating over it. Shocking. Who knew, right? Stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of obscurity in the labeling and knowledge of even just leather. But the point is, you're right. What's in there? Who made it? Yeah. What's the impact?
Which is
well,
well. How long have you been making shoes? All your life?
Well, I mean, as a hobbyist, yeah, but not professionally. I took this on as a second trade for myself. It's difficult to learn the old techniques now. Apprenticeships, all that stuff. It's all rare on the ground. There's no qualifications, which makes it difficult to get an apprenticeship if there's no qualification to tie it to. You can't get any of the funding.
So what about money? You haven't spoken about money yet.
Well, I have
making money, profit.
Yeah, I mean the actual all the economics of it. That's my advisor slash. She's willing to step in as COO for that.
Okay.
Yeah, Guinevere Blanchard. She's willing to
ship
to
on the road. A business partner.
Not at the moment. She's just an advisor, but she's willing because she sees the scalability of it. She can see how. Because it's kind of like the market, you know, the school kids here in this country are, you know, they basically have to wear black shoes, lace up, not boots usually, and, you know, within a few range of traditional styles, right? And as a result, you know, I mean, there's a lot of kids who need a lot of shoes, and there's a lot going in the landfill every year, so.
Where do you envisage selling and promoting the product?
Well, our approach is to, of course, start small and scale it up. So we're going to strategic partnerships with a couple schools. We thought it would be wise to work with, you know, what you guys call a public school, you know, and maybe offer some things like branding or things that would make it a little bit more value-added for them. And also consider the ways that we could find a state school that we could possibly subsidize the cost a bit to make it more accessible, but you know that part of the finances of it is yet to be determined based on who our partners are.
But do you envisage it being a product you could buy on the high?
Oh yeah, the scalability is there. I think once the product's there, there's IP potential for sure in the product itself, which is why I'm kind of being a bit vague about the details. I have a patent lawyer because I already have another patent in for my other brand, which is my day job, the Bespoke. And, we do have some made-to-order shoes as well, and I have a partner that I work on with that. But I have I already have a patent lawyer involved with that, so I've been speaking of this, and the potential's there. And so,
how have you got a plan to have somebody who will be sales? Because you're the
you're right.
But I see no disrespect at all. Because you're the person who knows exactly what to do. But have you got plans for that?
Yeah, like I say, my advisor now, she will step in as needed as COO, and she's willing to, you know, relocate here to get it going.
From where?
She's in the States.
Okay.
And we've got a small team. You know, I've got an engineer and another fellow who's got design and shoemaking experience, but also with making substitute leathers. So we've got, we've got like a few of us that are kind of signed on. Obviously, we need a marketing person. You know, we need better than a homemade website. You know, we have to scale it up to get it on the market.
There's nobody out there, no asking place that bothers you.
Well, I guess, to be honest with you, the Chinese bother me because they can take any design and just copy it, right? But yeah, the thing that I don't think they can do is come up with the same solution and formula to vegan or biodegradable 100%.
From where you are right now, have you got a kind of vision in mind about how long it would take for the final product to be ready?
I mean, I think we could probably do it in 6 months, but on a small scale, like we're planning with the school partnership.
There's going to have to be a period of testing to make sure that they're robust and hold up, and that the material is going to be just, because kids obviously, rough and tumble and all that.
That's why kids are great, though. That's why kids are great, because they're going to put them through the paces. This is how I started shooting, because I was having to buy shoes for my kids who have quite wide feet, and trying to get barefoot type minimal shoes, which is important to me for their foot health and stuff, from my estimation as a parent. And so it's through that process that I think they're the greatest test bed. You get them the shoes. The other thing is they don't wear them. They often grow out of them before they wear them out, is the thing.
They do get scuffed out
the map. It's not like that they wear through the sole necessarily. It's more that...
How much are these going to retail for, do you reckon?
Yeah, well, we're trying to make it within... I mean, we feel that it can be 40 to 60 pounds would be...
Oh, well, that's... I thought you were going to say over 100.
No. This would be oldable, I think, for the more of the middle class.
And you'd do a more high-end one with you as well?
I think that's the kind of... Yeah.
A diamond.
No, we're thinking branding, a good thing. Branding for schools and things. I mean, obviously...
So the school...